Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to yet another exciting episode of the Vinnie Eastwood Show. I almost said an exciting episode of Vinnie Eastwood, because when I have an episode, it is pretty freaking exciting. My very special guest joining me today is Freighter X, former Freemason and member of Nine Occult Orders, and we are going to be talking about something not too serious, right? It's just a little bit of dark occulted mysticism. Freighter, welcome to the program.
What is up? How you doing, Vinny? I love the broke-ass activist with a sense of entitlement. That's me, Ben, all the way.
Yeah, I find that it actually happens if you, like, you grow up in privilege, but you get that privilege taken away from you, and you spend the rest of your time trying to claw back to that privileged state of being, but you can't because you actually have to work for a living.
I laugh every time I hear our little bumper with Carl and talking about, you're... talking about your standard of living will never decrease. Yeah, right. You know, I mean, right now, Vinny, I'm making more money an hour than I ever have in my life in my hometown, and it's still far below enough. I mean, it's just ridiculous to think in one sense I'm celebrating having the highest wage I've ever had, but in the next breath I'm like, it's still not enough.
Well, it's because the key to happiness in life is having really low expectations.
That's it, man, all the way. And I think with this current cycle of our electoral, you know, process in America, here we are again, right? Weren't we here just like 4 years ago joking and laughing about the sham that politics was then? And here we are once again, 4 years later. And if we, as long as we lower our expectations, right, we won't be disappointed.
So everybody trusts politicians, right? They trust that they'll lie, they trust that they'll steal your money, and they continually vote for them, and they continually lie and steal your money, and then deny that they stole your money. It just... For somebody above the IQ of, like, a grape, it should be easy to see the scam, because it happens regularly, you know? Like, you get scammed regularly all the time, and you always lose out. Getting to the point where you argue about whether or not you're voting for bad or worse. But let me just tell you something, ladies and gentlemen. If you're voting for the bad or worse candidate, it doesn't matter. What it does is it guarantees that every single time you elect somebody, the country gets worse. Just think
about
that.
And let's point out, as we, you know, even though our show tonight, we're gonna look at other aspects of this all, but it's all connected, because the electoral process in America just keeps things going the way they are. I've had Jordan Maxwell on my show, The Middle Chamber, on Saturday nights recently, and we've been talking a lot about the war policies in America. And you know, no matter what party you're choosing, man, it's the same policy. Nothing ever changes. Anybody doesn't think so? What about all that hope and change? The last 8 years of hope and change, right? Guantanamo's still open. We're still fully invested in, you know, wars across the globe. There is no end in sight, ladies and gentlemen. We're talking about, you know, we're invading new countries every day. We're going into Syria. ISIS is expanding, even though, hello, everybody, ISIS was created by the Department of Defense, funded by America. But yet we have guys like... Well, I love this, too. Last time we spoke 4 years ago about the election cycle, it was our good friend, the Sonny Liston of Electoral Process. And anybody who doesn't know who Sonny Liston is, he's the one that takes a fall. And that was Mitt Romney taking a fall for the champ at the time. Mitt Romney, the farcical conservative candidate who was not really a Republican till right before he started running as a Republican, you know? I mean, he was completely the other, you know, when he was a governor of Massachusetts, he basically launched a mini Obamacare program right in Massachusetts, which completely screwed over the entire populace to the point when we showed up in Massachusetts, Romney had just left the governor's mansion and he was beginning his campaign for presidency, and everybody in Massachusetts swore up and down he was the worst, he was evil, and all this stuff. And yet when he was candidate for president, all those same conservatives were voting for him. And now he's out there calling Trump a fraud. Now, I mean, not that I'm a big Trump fan by any stretch in the measure, Vinny, because Trump is already said, everybody thinks he's an outsider, but he's already said he's going to use Richard Haass as his foreign policy advisor. Richard Haass He's a former Fed of the Council on Foreign Relations, man. I mean, you can't get more insider than this. And this is his going to be his, like, little, you know, salacious crumb to the job of the Hutt, you know, on his shoulder, cackling and giggling and telling him what to do, you know, as far as if he ever even got near the White House.
That's why they call him Huss, because of all the ha-ha-has they hear.
Right, yeah. But I digress. The point I'm making here is that how we live in this United States of amnesia. Everyone just goes along forgetting what happened the last cycle. It just happened, people. 4 years ago, we were here with a farcical campaign. Everybody thinks we have a two-party system. It is ridiculous. We have no exactly. two-party system. There is no left and right. Go ahead, Vinny.
You are half Polynesian and half American, all right? You're amnesian.
That's right, there it is. And we're living in this Hegelian device of distraction where they're telling us there's a left and a right. And the bottom line is we have one party. It's called the Wall Street Party, everybody. And I concluded this 20 years ago, but, I mean, don't listen to me because I'm just a proletariat wage slave. I mean, do as I do and you'll be broke like me.
Now, is anybody is anybody surprised that Wall Street has the biggest and best parties?
Right, exactly. Absolutely. They can they're well-funded. And meanwhile, you know, we're living in a world where a global power elite are running the whole entire thing. There's no ideology left in politics. Not really. It's just money and power. That's it. The Wall Street Party. I mean,
well, and sex and drugs and resources.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. And then, of course, we can get into how do we maintain power? You know, in our world, we are constantly inundated with strange stories of, you know, improprieties. We have all kinds of, well, the Clintons, for example, their books just keep coming out. The people just keep coming forward. It's like Bill Cosby, you know, with Bill Clinton, as far as how many people there are lurking around in the shadows in the closets, the victims of his improprieties.
They're just impropriety par excellence.
Par excellence. And then, of course, there's the body count. You know, I mean, there's the people that have actually that survived to tell the stories, and then there's the ones who don't. And that right there gets into the dark occulted aspects of all this. Because when I first got on this trail of truth, man, when I first started realizing there was, you know, things weren't as they seemed from my little white bread, white picket fence, New England upbringing, you know, the civic mythology, we were all spoon-fed. One of the first things I came into contact with was a book called Transformation of America by Kathy O'Brien and Mark Phillips. And in that book, they shed light on the Clintons. When they were in the governor's mansion in Arkansas, dark stuff going on there. And I've met Kathy O'Brien and Mark Phillips. I mean, I've sat and talked with them, and I tell you, they're very convincing. Their story is really convincing. And what we come up with is a whole, you know, monarch-level mind control, basically sex slavery, the traffic in drugs and illegal information. We already know that Hillary Clinton's involved in improprieties as far as information goes. She's trying to backpedal and get herself out of this mess with her emails, right? I mean,
she backpedals better than a unicyclist.
Right. When she left the White House the first time with Bill, she had to give back like $200,000 worth of merchandise that she stole from the White House, Vinny. She literally stole.
Like the Clinton, I mean, they're like burglar.
They're taking spoons, they're taking plates, they're taking towels. I mean, it's like, what is this, the Holiday Inn or something? I know you're, you know, from Arkansas, but really? So, can you be any more white trash?
Yeah. I mean, this is the White House. It is not a Motel 6.
It's madness, man. And this is just that went under the radar. You can find that news brief. It's right there. It was reported when it happened, but nobody even blinked. Because, I mean, that pales in comparison to Whitewater and the Oval Office scandals and all that other stuff, right?
Has there been a president in U.S. history, since Kennedy, I guess, but even before that, who wasn't, like, completely corrupt and so provably corrupt before they even so much as got on the podium that any serious person... You know what, Freda? I had a realization today. A lot of people have been giving me shit because I still vote, right? And I'm starting to think about it, right? If the system's actually corrupt, I've been in the situation before where I've had nothing but bad choices. And what do I do in those situations? I don't make a bad choice. I abstain. All right. That's what happens when you're doing, when you're voting in a meeting or something like that, and you don't actually like either of the answers or either of the questions that are being put out. You abstain, you don't participate. However, that to say that that accomplishes something or that it doesn't accomplish something is really silly. I think that voting and not voting accomplish the exact same thing. Nothing, because the tyrannical scumbaggery keeps going on, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think that, you know, when we're dealing with the presidential electoral process, you're absolutely right. This big race is all a farce. It's compromised. There's no – listen, Jordan Maxwell, again, I just had him on the show, so he's fresh in my mind. He said in the show, he's like, we don't have selection for president. We have election. So we're allowed to elect who someone else selected. Someone else selects the candidates, and then we are allowed to elect who has been selected to choose from. That's not really freedom, ladies and gentlemen. That's not really democracy. Mm. That's contrived. That's deliberately controlled. And so, yeah, but you know what? You know what, though? You know what's really weird about our whole system? They leave things hidden right in plain sight. And one of the things that I think is a glaringly obvious way for people to still maybe, hopefully, possibly exercise some sort of democratic process is the two-year elections, not the presidency, but the House of Representatives elections. Why would you ask? Why is that such a big deal? Why is that so important? Well, number one, those guys are getting reelected every 2 years. They have to have your vote. They are hungry for a vote. Every 2 years, they got to reelect. So they got to go through that process all over again. The other thing is the House of Representatives are the ones who have they basically set up all the funding for all other programs in the government. So the committee that puts money, allots money for everything that happens, that committee is within the House of Representatives. So the representatives that are voted in are the ones that are actually going to be there voting for the money that's used for all the programs. And guess what? Money talks, right? So the money, if you can have a legislation all day long on a bill, pass a law, blah, 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 blah. If there's no money for that, it's not going to happen. It has to be paid for in some way. And so the committees that choose that money to be directed towards that, they're very important in the process. So it seems to me that's the only way that a person out there, like an average everyday citizen, could have any effect is by voting for their House of Representatives. Because the electoral process for president, I mean, come on, how much further removed can you be from this process? And you raise a great point. Whoever was an honorable man? I don't know, because when you look back, you find scathing, you know, critiques on every candidate. Even Lincoln, everybody thinks Lincoln was the greatest guy in the world, you know, but he spoke to his crowd. If he was in front of a pro-slavery crowd, he said he wasn't going to end slavery. If he was in front of an abolitionist crowd, he said he was going to abolish slavery. I mean, he was just like any other politician. He spoke to his crowd. They make a lot of promises. But as we all know, anybody who's lived through a few of these elections knows promises don't get friggin' met. They're not going to take care of us. I mean, everybody thinks Bernie Sanders is such a great guy. You know, he makes all these great points, all kinds of populist points. But ladies and gentlemen, Bernie Sanders has been in the government for how long? 32 years? You know, you don't just exist in that system unless you know how to. You don't swim with sharks unless you are a shark. You don't survive, right? You can't be a guppy and swim with sharks. They devour you. How do you live 32 years in the waters of sharks unless you know how to swim like a shark? So don't be fooled by the populist rhetoric coming out of Bernie Sanders, because he's just another one of these politicians. They all are compromised. It is the Wall Street Party. They killed JFK. They staged Watergate. They staged 9/11. They've raped our economies. They're destroying the environment. And they're causing war across the globe for profit.
And the entire reason that they can do this is that you don't remember what happened 4 years ago, the last time there was an election. Every single time. There has never been a point in US history where the population has woken up to the fact that the elections are a fraud. Not once! And that's why every single president has turned out to be some kind of scumbag if you actually dig in and scratch the surface. Their dossier, their resume is dripping with liquid shit.
And blood. It's dripping with blood. That's how this whole entire mess keeps going, is with the blood of innocence, with the blood of people, with the, you know, the red, white, and blue, the stars and stripes on the flag of America. Do you know what those represent, those stars?
Well, the red is the blood that's coming out of the nose of the guy who's got something wrapped around his head in a face mask while the blue water is being tipped onto him to torture him to extract information out of the guy. Hey, and by the way, there wasn't no change and no hope after Barack Obama. You mentioned Guantanamo. Well, in fact, there has been a little bit of change there. They got a new snow cone machine for the guards.
Oh, just like, hey, did you hear? Obama has given the former presidents an 18% raise in their salaries right before he becomes a former president, Vinny.
Wait,
he
hold
gives
on, hold on.
The breath. Go ahead.
Okay. All right. One day, I wish that I would become a brothel owner and just give myself freebies like that. But no, this is called morals and ethics and integrity and stuff. And quite frankly, if you want to be in the political game, the major political game, you can't have any of that, right? You have to be compromised. And now, it doesn't matter how good a person you think you are. It doesn't matter how long your track record of success is. In fact, the longer your track record of success is, the worse the election's going to turn out for you. Because how many people have been on that election podium and really garnered the public support that have actually achieved a thing? Okay, see, that's the reason why they're career politicians. If a politician started coming in and started solving problems, he would suddenly find himself without a job. But the guy who comes in and gets the county more into debt suddenly has a bigger budget next year. And suddenly has more money for his elections. And never mind that all the private contractors and everything of that nature have got their hands in the till anyway. You see how that works? The whole thing is stitched up like a very, very elaborate puppet, okay? Just because we're all puppets in this. And I can guarantee you that not one of us is actually really truly free. There's a hell of a lot of restrictions and things that if we actually wanted to do something, we wouldn't be allowed to. We can change that situation if we want to, but at the moment it is what it is, and you endeavor to do what you can. But the real question is here, how much are you actually going to take? How many lies do you need to be told before you start to want the truth?
Yeah. And the question is, how do you exercise any rights to secure truth? We're living in a world where it's such a fantasy world. I mean, I grew up, Vinny, in North America on the North Atlantic coast in the New England and white picket fences and, you know, white church steeples and, you know, the apple pie and all that, right? Was raised with the civic mythology that, you know, during the Cold War where we were the good guys and the Russians were the bad guys and so were the yada yada yada, and it was real clear that only bad guys tortured, and it was real clear that we were a nation of freedom and independence, and there was a tradition of democracy and a tradition of free exchange of ideas, and that, you know, we had a sense of freedom and a sense of that the Bill of Rights was the guiding principles of our lives. This was all a sham. I mean, what I've found out as a grown-up looking back on all this is that America, like New Zealand and Australia, were penal colonies right from the beginning. This is a slave colony, everybody. We're all in on it. We're all sitting here living in a penal colony, being fed this delusional, you know, garbage that's trying to tell you you're free in a state where you have we are totally locked in. And if you want to know if you have freedom, you want to know if you have rights, then exercise them and see, you know, exercise them and see. As Voltaire said, you want to know who controls you, just look at who you're not allowed to criticize. Just look at who you're not allowed to speak out against. And then you'll find out who runs things.
If we had just one tyrannical party, Americans would see that it was a dictatorship. But if you add an additional tyrannical party, suddenly it's the freest nation in the fucking world.
Absolutely. And the thing is that what people don't realize is that the way this all progressed and developed from the beginning days of the plantation fathers who set up, you know, the early colonies, all the way up to, you know, the spread of Manifest Destiny across the West, and then the full-on establishment of the United States of America, and then the full-on establishment of the world power America. This process didn't just go in a progressive linear fashion. People, everyone thinks that, you know, we're still a part of this whole Manifest Destiny idea. Like, we are engaged, literally engaged in the democratic process, not even realizing that what we are, in fact, are the collateral, the resources, the assets to a giant corporation. You know, we are what they use for collateral to get the latest loans.
It's
from the IMF.
Livestock. All right. Yes, if you're born, you get a birth certificate. The birth certificate's got a shipping number on it, just like you would if you were importing stock that off a ship that was berthed at the port. All right. You are owned, son. You've got somebody who owns your birth certificate. It ain't you.
And you know, the fact of the matter is in America, when we started, you alluded to the fact we're going to talk about the dark occulted aspects to this. Well, it's real easy to do here in America, because it turns out this entire land was filled with, you know, traditions, metaphysical, spiritual, occulted traditions were here long before the white settlers came. The natives that lived here, they all settled communities on mounds and around ancient sites. They all understood the earth energy. They tried to find balance, or they tried to interact with it. It was very clear. But the settlers who came over from England, most of those people had no clue. When they saw what the Native Americans were doing, they're like, these guys are devil worshipers or whatever. But not all of them. See, there were some people in the groups who knew exactly what was going on. They were the ones who had the secret charts and the guides and the documents and the different aspects, the plans for empire that were being laid at that time. People don't realize that when Queen Elizabeth, you know, the great queen of Britannia, when she was at the rise, at the head of the Empire of England, when it was just starting, when the foundation, the cement of the foundation was still wet, her court astrologer, who was like the Merlin to, you know, King Arthur, was Dr. John Dee. And this guy was tapped in. He was able to make contact with spirits, with entities who have, I believe, have counseled and have influenced and manipulated our government in the West ever since the 16th century, since this time in the medieval Middle Ages, when this guy, Dr. John Dee, made contact and developed an entire system in which he mapped out 91 parts of the earth, spots on the map of the entire, imagine the entire globe with 91 crisscrossing points on it, an entire globe encased in a grid. And at every crisscross point, there's a dot. And on there's 91 of those across the entire globe. And on every dot, on every spot, there's a demon and an angel that you could evoke if you had the right sound, color, shape, you know, sigil.
Amount of weed.
Yeah, right. Or, well, at the time, they were using incenses and they were, you know, inhaling strange fumes and all, you know, we're doing all kinds of strange things to derange the senses. But yes, and it doesn't matter if anybody listening believes this stuff. What matters is the people doing it, they believe it, and that's why it's effective. Because everything you do, if you believe it, that's where the real power, that's why the people who are in power today, Vinny, the people who maintain power today are using the same system. They are tapping into the same powers than the same entire system that was set up hundreds and hundreds of years ago, if not thousands of years ago. But at least I think what happens is every millennium or so, another, you know, gang comes into, they take over. You know, there's a new gang, a new faction. You know, it's a big, giant group, and there's a lot of factions, and sometimes one faction rises up, like, you know, England's in control, Rome's in control for a while, Egypt's in control, you know, throughout the millennia, different groups rise up. America, it'll probably be China eventually, you know, I mean, so at all these points in the historical lineage, you have whatever the latest thugs are that are in charge. They're using the same techniques, the same toolbox, and they're tapping into the same energy. And so imagine, here's Dr. John Dee. He sees Britannia. He sees England as the new empire the sun's never going to set on. And here's Queen Elizabeth. She's at the helm. She's the flagship of this entire empire. He's like an ancient or medieval remote viewer. He can see far distances using the powers of these strange so-called angelic beings. They identified themselves as angels, but I mean, what do we know? Who are we to know what these beings really are?
Yeah, because obviously if a demon came in to you, you say, I'm a demon, I'm a trickster, and I'm a liar, right? Straight off the bat, you know?
Yeah, you're going to be like, oh, come on board. Let's go for a ride, right? Yeah, yeah. No, he's going to say, oh, I'm here to help you, man. I mean, you want some power, some knowledge, some wisdom? And all we can do is measure the effects. What's the effect? What happened when England became an empire?
They started colonizing the entire planet and acting more or less like an infectious virus, plugging themselves into places, planting flags, wiping out the natives, taking over their language and their culture, and setting up their own as a form of a prison that told them that they were free. And they used companies, dead corporations, to do it rather than the state.
And all they do is just keep changing the business model, change the business model, change. Every time somebody has a problem with the way things are going, we'll just adjust the business model. Who were the first people to outlaw slavery? The English, the ones that pretty much, you know, made it a main staple of the entire globe, and then they make it illegal. Isn't that convenient for them, right? And that's how, by the way, that back in the day when they were, they make it illegal, but they were still transporting, indentured servants from England, Ireland, and Scotland to America. Even though they had outlawed slavery, they were still transported. They had the Transportation Act.
Very similar to how New Zealand banned nuclear materials or nuclear-powered ships, but they allowed nuclear materials from Australia and all their mining to pass through our ports.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, I was going to say the reason why we have the nations of New Zealand and Australia was because at the end of the revolution in America, we said no more dumping your felons and the people you want to transport to us, to the United States, can't do it anymore. So they started taking them to New Zealand and Australia and dumping people there. And these, the quote unquote felons were merely people who were too poor to defend themselves against the system. These weren't felons. These were people who were deemed, unemployable because they changed the rules and said your trade is no longer really employment. Sorry, you're not really employed anymore. Therefore, you're now a vagabond and a vagrant, and we can bust you, make you a felon. And then once you've made a felon, we could transport you to any colony in the world at our will and pleasure to be worked to death, basically, because you're too poor to defend yourself. And this is the result.
I was about to say, America. Oh, wait, it was the British.
It was England. Yeah. And I mean, we've done the same. We've done worse, obviously. But so moving forward from that point, I mean, this same pattern keeps, what do they do? Okay. So, the plantation model that worked for a while, the slavery model worked for a while, but they had to change the business model. We had the Industrial Revolution come in.
Right. This is how it happened. All right. They go,
right.
Okay, bro, we've got these 12 slaves here, and we got to feed them. Yep. We got to house them. Yep. And if they get sick, we got to patch them up. Yep. Why don't we just give them $2.50 an hour and tell them to fuck off? Yeah. You're free now. See you tomorrow at 7 a.m.
Yeah, fend for yourself. Hey, good luck with meals tonight. Fend for yourself, buddy. I think it's going to rain. We'll see you tomorrow.
Brilliant.
Yeah, that's it. Oh, what a brilliant model, right? Brilliant business model. They're like, wow, guys, I mean, why didn't we think of this sooner, And that was the North presenting that to the South, too. They're like, look, South guys, come on. This whole cradle to grave, taking care of your slaves, that's really not working for us, man.
Yeah. We could just... Why don't we just profit off them and not take care of them?
Work them to death. We'll, And we'll cut them loose and let them fight all whoever survives. They're the toughest ones. We want those guys working with us anyways. You know what I mean?
Oh, America.
Survival of the fit. It's Darwinian, right? It's what it is all the way, right?
Oh, my breast beats with pride.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, we move forward. And then what everybody doesn't realize is that when democracy, the, you know, Declaration of Independence in America, that was just, hey, we're reformatting. We're reorganizing the business, guys.
A defrag on the hard drive, bro.
We're updating all the software. We'll be offline for about, I don't know, 10 years. But when we come back on, we got this thing called democracy, these Bill of Rights. It's going to be great.
Service in your area is no longer available. Please call back later.
Nobody's going to be United States. Nobody's going to be Americans anymore. They're going to be citizens now. It's going to be awesome. We got it all worked out, you know?
It's going to be great. You get you get wine, you get marijuana, you get tobacco, and you get a third of your income stolen every week. All right.
And of course, again, what people don't realize, it doesn't take everybody to buy into this. Because, like, the revolution itself, the revolution was fought with like 10% of the population. I mean, the smallest part
3%.
Of the population. Right. The 3% actually fought it. 10% ideologically embraced the idea of revolution. And then 3% actually fought it. So, like, 97% of American population were like, no, we like the British. We're happy with the way things are.
Yeah, because that's what happens if you're plenty well-fed and you don't really have any many problems. When someone tells you that you're a slave and you actually need to be a revolution, otherwise you're not going to be free, they don't know what the hell you're talking about.
Yeah, it's just like Mark Twain said, it's easier to fool a person than to convince them that they're being fooled. That's the bottom line. You can't convince – it's like Chicken Little. You can run around saying the sky is falling all day long. But until the internet goes off and there's no more food in the fridge and somebody's kicking in the back door, nobody's going to do anything to change things. It's just going to go along with it as long as they can keep getting – you know, Americans Got Talent and Dancing with the Stars and streaming on your internet, on your phone.
See, this is why,
you know,
I get upset with the a lot of the Patriot movement, because they hype up as if the government's just going to start raiding people's homes and striking them away to FEMA camps and so on and so forth. And it's like, dude, no, they're not going to do that. You know why? Because they don't have to. You're killing yourself with aspartame and X Factor, okay? That stuff is like spray painting your brain.
Totally. Calcifying all the, you know, your pineal glands, all the vital glands in your brain are being turned into little calcified nubs. You know what I mean? Like,
you won't feel anything in your lower penile places ever again.
Well, it's funny you mentioned that too about feeling things. Because that's the most frustrating aspect of this. Because we live in the United Pharmaceutical States of America, I mean, it's like anybody who would even have a problem with the way things are, you go to the doctor, they give you Effexorol or something like that, it just takes away the feeling. So now you can just get up in the morning, drink your coffee with this, you know, aspartame in it, you know, watch Fox News or CNN, whichever variety you choose, and go off to your cybermind job, because you don't have to feel like there's anything wrong because you've been glossed over with some sort of psychotropic, which, by the way, was developed from the same root alkaloids that make acid, LSD, you know what I mean, and other designer drugs like ecstasy and things that have been used for decades on the, you know, underground level, you know, on the illegal level. They actually have synthesized all the drugs that help you get out of bed in the morning and feel okay about things when you're older from the same alkaloids. So I ask you, is there not a little bit of dark occulted mysticism going on right there? If the very same – we know Sandoz actually invented LSD, marketed it, synthesized it, and marketed it. Owsley, the guy who worked with the Grateful Dead and spread acid all around all the kids in the 60s, went and studied at Sandoz in Switzerland, the pharmaceutical company to learn how to do the LSD. And then the same companies produce Zoloft and Prozac and all the other drugs that are going to help those same baby boomers when they're in their 50s and 60s having anxiety attacks because they realize they can't reconcile their lifestyles to their former ideals when they wake up in the morning. So let's just take another drug to just quiet all that. You know, don't worry about it. Because there's NASCAR and beer and, you know, Dancing with the Stars coming on.
Yeah,
real soon.
And you're going to feel frustrated and angry for the entire time that you're alive. And the only way to stop that from happening is to quit the way that you're living utterly and completely and abandon it because it has no value anymore, right? Or
this is it.
You can dope yourself up to spare yourself, to distract yourself or to numb yourself from the pain of your own fucking inadequacy.
This is where we find ourselves, Vinny. We're the bullhorns on the edge of the abyss. We're saying to everybody, you know, yeah, go ahead and go back to sleep if you want. There's plenty of aspartame and, you know, NASCAR and cable TV and stuff for everybody on this side.
I like shouting out over the abyss. The acoustics are much better.
Right. Or wake the frack up, you know? I mean, what the hell? Yeah, I love the way you said at the beginning that, you know, you're the broke-ass activist with a sense of entitlement. That is so right on. That's it, man. I guarantee you, you don't know a broker mofo than me, a guy who wrote a book, made a DVD, published in magazines, got a weekly radio show, been all over America, talking in front of hundreds of thousands of people. I am the brokest guy you know, man. How is this possible? I'm so broke, I can't even pay attention, man. You know what I mean? And yet, I mean, it's not like I don't work. It's not like I'm not trying. It's not like I don't do everything I can to make the most of it. But, you know, it's because we live in a system in which you can't win. And if you try, even I could give all that we're doing right now up tomorrow. I could throw myself headlong into the wage slave job. I could get three of those jobs and bust my ass till the sun goes down every night. And I'll still find myself in the same exact position I'm in right now. There is absolutely does not make a difference. It's completely rigged. The game is rigged. The game is fixed. You know, it's a big, like the other Carlin's, you know, the other Carlin bit on AFR. It's a big club and we're not in it. You know what I mean?
That's another point that I'd like to write. I know some people, even worked with them in the truth movement and that kind of thing, who actually are now siding with the elite. They actually think that people deserve to be exterminated, that they're just slave scum, etc. And it's just, what do you think is going to happen? Just think about it for 2 seconds, all right? You're talking about people who haven't worked a day in their life, and when they have worked, it's been through lies, cheating, stealing, threatening, murdering, and harassing. And the other side of that coin is that you don't have that upbringing. You don't have that bloodline. You don't have that advantageous position to start off from. You're not going to be part of their game, okay? You're not. Unless, and the most important thing, you're willing to compromise everything that makes you you and become one of them. JFK tried, okay? He turns out that his womanizing and his hanging around with mafia gangsters and things like that was actually a deliberate scheme that him and his brother were actually involved in so they could gather intelligence on the mafia criminals that were currently running the US as far as they saw it. All right? And guess how successful he was at exposing them? You guessed it. He got shot in the fucking head.
Shot in the head in public, yep.
All right, so they can do that to you if you're that big of a threat. If they decide to, okay, this is who you're dealing with. That's another thing that's really pissing me off, Afraid of, right? Just people don't have any idea what they're dealing with here, okay? These clowns have been in charge of the planet for thousands of years, conceivably. And they're just now starting to get industrialized in the information age where they can control almost everybody around the globe simultaneously without lifting a finger. Okay? Do you know what you're up against? I do. That's why I quit my job. That's why I spend all my time exposing these criminal scumbags, because if somebody else doesn't do it, we're all going to die. All of us.
That's the point. They're actually using, you know, their method. They have no problem taking lives to get their agendas accomplished. That's the way it goes. I had a job out in the Midwest. One of the last jobs I had in the office, you know, working in an office, was doing teleconferencing. And I was working, basically my job was it's a virtual conference. So you'd have lawyers and business people coming together and having a conference meeting over the internet in a virtual conference room. And we, as the operators, would be taking the calls and connecting people and placing them into the virtual conference room where the speaker would be. And then if they had questions, we'd field the questions to the speaker, blah, 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 blah. So this is what we did. And a lot of times it was bankers and lawyers. Sometimes it was medical professionals. And this one day, this is just like about 2 years ago, this one day I'm sitting there listening, and it's a bunch of lawyers and a pharmaceutical company, and they're having a meeting after a lawsuit that's just been started against them from people who used one of their pharmaceutical products. And it was something to do with like kidney dialysis. And the fact of the matter was that some people had died and some people had been really sick and had been screwed up from the product. But a lot of people had been treated and there had been a huge profit. And, you know, most people were work. It was going okay. But there was enough people that had raised a class action lawsuit against the company that they were having to deal with settlement. And they were in the meeting talking about settling. And at one point, and we're sitting there, we're the virtual conference guys. We're like flies on the wall. We don't even exist to these guys. We're invisible, you know, but we're on the horn, because if they have any questions or anything we need to help them with, we have to be able to hear what they're saying if they refer to us. And one of the executives for the pharmaceutical company said to another one, almost like, you know, like a little aside while they're talking, and they were talking about the cost of the settlement. And the one exec said to the other one, matter-of-factly, just off the cuff, well, you know, we already knew this when we made the decision not to invest in research development and instead have this money ready for settlement. And I realized what he meant by that. Anybody who doesn't understand what I'm saying right now, ladies and gentlemen, what he meant was it was okay for people to die because they were going to make enough money off this product to pay off their families. And they didn't mind not spending the money on research and development to prevent death, because they were going to make enough of a profit to pay people off. This is the world we live in. This is, a matter of fact, you know, modus operandi. This is the par for the course.
It is nothing new. There is nothing new under the sun, right? So here's the thing. You're talking about people who have managed to keep secrets very well. How exactly do they accomplish that? Well, you might have guessed, they use secret societies as a recruiting pool. Okay? Was that not obvious? Straight up the front.
They don't just use them for, you know, you're absolutely right. It's a recruiting tool, and it's also a technique to keep people quiet, because if you join the Freemasons or any of these orders in which they have secret rituals and you have to take an oath to not reveal secrets of the order, well, that always is accompanied with a little oath that says you're going to keep the secrets of Masons and Masonry, for example. They say you take an oath and obligation to keep the secrets of Masons and Masonry except murder and treason. They're the only things that you have to – well, you don't have to, but they're the only things you have a choice. They're not even saying you have to report them if they tell you they've murdered someone or committed treason. They're just saying you have a choice whether you can tell on them or not. So you can still keep that secret. That's fine, according to the Masons. You can keep murder and treason a secret if you choose to, but you can also, if you choose to, report him to the authorities if he's committed murder or treason. Anything else, though, you're supposed to keep those secrets. And that's just in the first 3 degrees. There are dozens of degrees. Every time you go through a new degree, you take a new oath on that order. So by the time you're done, like if you join the Scottish Rite, you've taken 32 degrees. And so you've taken 32 oaths of secrecy. So that's why all the astronauts that went up on the missions, the Apollo missions, there were all 32nd or 33 degree Freemasons, which means Scottish Rite Freemasons, which means that NASA knew that they were willing to, they could keep secrets. They kept 32 of them, you know, so they were at least that trustworthy. And then, of course, you know, we know, I mean, there's a lot of sketchy stuff about the Apollo missions that you got to wonder. But that,
oh, man, so the one of the latest issues of Uncensored magazine here in New Zealand, they actually found all the photographs of, like, the sets and the big crane arm that they were using for the lander and everything like that. And I was just like, oh, my God, it's, like, so obvious now. And,
yeah,
and
wasn't it in New Zealand? Was it New Zealand or Australia that the signal feed came from the moon? Was it Australia or New Zealand?
I think it was Australia.
Yeah, because it came.
But
to
the crew of people that were manning that that satellite station in Australia was headed by a guy from New Zealand who came from the same school as Sir Ernest Rutherford, who created the atom or discovered the how to split the atom, and Sir Edmund Hillary, who conquered Everest. So all those three guys from New Zealand went to the exact same little primary school.
Wow! I just heard on the radio here in Massachusetts. I'm living on Cape Cod on the coast, and there's a little town called Dennis, Massachusetts, and there's a guy living in that. It's right next to my town. There's a guy living in that town who designed the electronics, the computers on the Apollo mission, who's speaking at a library on Thursday right near me, like 10 minutes away. But, of course, it's during a time when I have to work. I want to go down there, and I want to be like, you know, so tell me, how did you insulate the computers from the Van Allen belt, the 1,000 miles of radiation that those flimsy little capsules had to travel through on the way to the moon and back without frying the circuit boards along with the, you know, the people inside the capsules anyway, but just tell me, please, how did you do that?
Oh, we just drank more water, you know, for a few hours until we passed through. So it was all right.
We used duct tape and Mylar, son, like we're supposed to, like true Americans.
Yeah, I was wearing a tinfoil hat. It protected me really well.
I mean, it's just phenomenal. That I know we're digressing on the moon thing, but the fact of the matter is that the reason I brought it up is because that's a good example. See, when I went through Freemasonry, 9 different orders, that was, you know, some of those orders had several degrees. So in the end, I went through 15 different obligations. I was knighted 5 times and went through 15 different obligations. So 15 different, like, hour-long degrees. So 15 hours of degrees in which I had to recite some little ritual verse and swear on the Bible, usually, that I wouldn't reveal the secrets of the order or the members therein. So there's number one. There's the first way in which you can isolate people and, you know, insulate them against others and start to get your little cabal together, just like they did back in the, you know, 18th century with the Illuminati, the original Bavarian Illuminati. They went into Freemasons' lodges and they selected people from the lodges. And that's, you know, they already knew they were trustworthy enough because they were keeping the secrets of Masons. But then there's a whole other dark occulted side to this. And we've talked about it in other shows in the past, but we haven't talked about it in a while. And that's the whole idea of evil spirits, man. The whole idea of the ghosts of the Nephilim, which is an article series I'm working on right now for Paranoia Magazine. But also you could call it, you know, disembodied spirits or egregore, which is a term that's used in the Greek to mean, you know, like a disembodied spirit or a messenger spirit. And what I've found in my research, Vinny, and this is something that may seem a little kooky to people listening, but you got to know this is at the root of all these lodge systems. These are spiritual and occult beliefs that are at the root of these systems. These are things that are happening whether you believe it or not. And even if the people involved don't believe it, it doesn't matter because somebody believes it. And all it takes is enough people with intention to believe it, to make it manifest.
Well, and also down on the very straightforward back and forth level, I found that the best way to explain this concept is, let's say you're not a Christian extremist with a explosive vest on. Okay, let's say you're not one of those. Does that mean that because you don't believe as that Christian extremist with the bomb vest next to you believes, that bomb isn't dangerous and isn't going to kill you if it goes off just because that guy believes differently to you? No.
Perfect. Perfect. That's a perfect analogy. I agree. That's a great analogy because you're going to die from that bomb blast whether you believe that guy or not. It's going to happen.
Yeah.
So you can say all day long, he's a kook and what he says doesn't matter. And, oh, I don't know why he thinks that's going to make any difference. It doesn't make any difference. Well, you can think that all you want, but you're going to still blow up when that bomb goes off, you know?
Yeah.
And so,
It's like the people who are dying of obesity related illnesses going, nah, there's nothing wrong with eating meat in every single meal, topped with cheese in every single sour and salty shit that you could possibly come up with. You know, like, there's nothing wrong with it. See, I've been eating it all my life and nothing bad's happened to me. Really? What about the 600 pound cyst on your face that is called your body? All right, like, bro.
Exactly. And so, well, getting back to this point, though, it's like a Doctor Who episode or whatever. I remember seeing an episode of Doctor Who where it was like some weird near future dimension, and this television company was like BBC One or whatever that was running everything, controlling everything. And what was going on was there was signals coming out of the boxes, brainwashing people, and you know, causing all this trouble. And what was going on was there was this evil, like, alien, spiritual, dimensional entity that was, like, had invaded the television studio and was in charge, like, you know, embedded in the computer panel and was, you know, broadcasting its influence out through the television system. And that's science fiction and all, right? But actually, in fact, this is what we're talking about. Because what we know about these egregores is that they manifest when people, when human beings, this is something that humans have known for thousands of years. This goes back to ancient times. When people come together and all do a thing, like a ritual activity, sing a song, walk around in a circle, do certain gestures, you know, just doing any kind of rote, repetitive activity over and over again in a pattern, in a group, you generate an energy signature. This energy signature is like a beacon that literally attracts these disembodied spiritual entities that exist in the metaphysical reality that we can't see, but they can influence. And what happens is that when they're drawn into that group, they take on a life of their own, and they will maintain their existence. After a while, it doesn't matter if the same people do the thing or if they even want to do the thing. This spiritual entity will attract new people and bring new. And can't you see the pattern here? Like for a lodge system, for example, you bring in new candidates, you initiate them, you teach them the ritual. What's the ritual? It's this thing that everybody's done repetitively for hundreds of years. Every month on the moon, like, you know, we go and we meet in the same spot. We do the same movements. We say the same words. We, you know, make the same motions. And we literally invoke the same. First, we project a spiritual energy signature, and then we literally attract an entity who then draws off everyone in the room. And it's like a parasitic relationship, a symbiotic relationship. This has been going on across the globe, but especially, you know, I can speak to America because, I mean, Freemasonry, Freemasonic lodges and other fraternal lodges and occult orders are so woven into the very foundation of this country.
Yep, seriously. It's exactly like you say, the repetition, whole bunch of people in one room, you know. I'm hot just like an oven. I need some
And then if you jump back to right. And then if you jump back to what we were talking about John Dee before, if he made this map of the whole world with 91 parts, and then he gives it to a guy like, I don't know, a guy like Walter Raleigh, the explorer who came and founded Virginia, right? He gives him this map and he says, go, you know, he says to him and William Penn or whoever else, all these explorers, they go out and they go, where do they go? They go to power spots. They go to spots in America that are not coincidentally, you know, convergence, where there's power, where there's intense potential right there where the Philadelphia waterway regions where they
I just also want to get that out there as well, man. There is a layer of reality that exists just beneath and just above the 3D space. Okay, it's just outside of your perception, it's outside of visible light, it's outside of time, but it's there nonetheless. And regardless of whether or not you're able to perceive it, it's there. And some people are trying to access it, and they're willing to do really crazy stuff in order to get a response. It's called politics, folks. You know, I mean, have you ever seen something so crazy in your life? I haven't. We'll be right back after the break at the Vinnie Eastwood Show.com with my very special guest, Freighter X. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live on American Freedom Radio for your listening pleasure. And my very special guest is Freida X from the Middle Chamber. And have you been doing a regular show with Jordan Maxwell weekly on American Freedom Radio, have you, Freida? Or has he just been a guest once?
Yeah, we just kind of been, you know, we just sort of been winging it and seeing what's how we found that we've been having pretty good conversations the last couple of weeks. We're kind of toying with the idea of doing something regular. I actually took over the slot that he had on Saturday nights, 7 p.m. West Coast time, 10 p.m. East Coast time in America. And frankly, I'm really excited about it because he's one of those guys that he was like one of the first out there. His material, he was doing this stuff 50 years ago, man. I mean, he was saying and talking about the dark occulted aspects to America before anybody even, I mean, can you imagine? Talk about being a voice in the wilderness.
Literally the man who was talking about dark occulted mysticism while we were in Pampas.
Or not even alive. He told me he was on the way, on the day that JFK was assassinated, he was on the way to give a talk on like something to do with UFOs or something. I can't remember what it was he said, but he was on the way to give a talk at a library or something, and they heard on the radio that JFK had been assassinated. So that's 1963, right? I mean, this guy was already doing it then, already standing up and trying to draw attention to things. And so, so you got to give him credit. He's a legend in that way. At the same time, go ahead.
What I find very ironic is the amount of people who are running around saying, oh, he's working for the New World Order and he's doing all this other stuff. He's like the most broke ass.
Working for the New World Order, they're not paying very good.
I mean, seriously, they need to reprint some Federal Reserve notes and help a brother out.
He's a perfect example. According to people I know that went and visited him, his house, he's got stacks, and he's got like Manly P. Hall's what's left over of Manly P. Hall's library in boxes and stacks all over his house. So the guy's sitting on knowledge that expands the span of human existence. Yeah, right. And he's, you know, it's like almost out of circulation in his possession because he has no resources to even probably preserve or take care of that stuff any further. And then to make the most of it, to make it available. He's talking about doing a research society and he's got a website set up, but all this takes funding. All this takes resources. It takes time. Everything, you know, and I know even the basic media we're doing on the radios with videos and podcasts right now takes so many hours of time. People don't even realize. If you devote, I am also working full time and trying to support a family, plus doing research, plus doing a podcast, and all the work that we do, we see very little in the way of support for this effort we put forward, and it's so hard. And then if you have somebody like Jordan, and I know you've gone through this, and I've gone through this with people, you know, sabotaging your media or locking you out of your sites or stealing stuff or, you know, just all the things we go through that are so demoralizing when you already gave everything and then some of what you had. You put yourself beyond your capabilities and then somebody steals from you or screws you over or rips you, you know, locks you out or whatever, all the things that happen. It's so demoralizing.
How do you reconcile the fact that just because you're trying to save people doesn't mean they're not going to fight for the enemy and screw you over and destroy you just because, you know, they say they're part of the movement or something like that. You really don't know. Always keep your eyes open and your ears open and look for those little subtle warning signs and things like that. You know, it's just it's a very paranoid business. It's like a cross between show business and politics, which is the worst combination I've ever heard, because you've got not only a whole bunch of manipulative people involved, but also a bunch of very, very showy people who are great at getting your attention and getting you to believe them and be enthralled by their personalities that they put on fakely for you.
They play upon our weaknesses, especially like the things we describe. We're people who already struggle. All of us in, like, you know, Vinny, myself, Freeman, Mark Pascoe, anybody who's on a microphone, on a show, talking to you is an outsider, ladies and gentlemen. Anybody from all the shows on American Freedom Radio, Ocelli, Opperman, all these shows, these are people who probably nobody in their like immediate circles probably wants to hear a word they say anymore because they're sick of hearing it and they didn't believe it to begin with, right? So they were like an outsider in their own little group. Already they were struggling. Already they were feeling ostracized. And then they got on the microphone and then they assumed this role of somebody who's going to be, you know, speaking like a, you know, like a town crier. You know, hey, hear you, everybody, check this out. So you're already insecure. And if somebody plays upon your ego and, you know, makes you feel like they really believe in you, they make you feel good about what you're doing, they make you feel supported and you're not alone, everybody wants to feel that way. So you're drawn to people like that. Well, if it's all well and fine if they have the good intentions, but what if they don't? When I first started doing this in 2011, I had older radio guys that had been doing it for years and years would give me advice and stuff, and they'd be like, watch out for agents, watch out for, you know, this and that. And I used to think, those guys are kind of paranoid, aren't they? What the hell? They sound like they're really – but you know what? They were right. They were absolutely right. I've done public speeches in conventions and groups of people all over the country, and the weirdest people will come up to me and say the weirdest things and try to get me to go along with the weirdest stuff. And then that's just in public places. Then there's online, the people that will contact me with the craziest ideas and try to, you know, get me to buy into their delusions or to get me to buy in to, you know, to get me to invest in their endeavors. And I would, you know, which leads to, you know, getting taken advantage of over and over again. And so I know now, after having several aborted attempts at trying to do a network with other media people, you know, and have it all collapse and the whole thing come tumbling down, have us all put lots of effort and work into, get, you know, uploading our media and then have somebody lock you out of everything on the day of the launch and say, oh, sorry, no, psych, you know, want to lick, psych, you know what I mean? Just kidding, I'm just steal all your stuff instead and then I'm going to relaunch it 6 months from now and, you know, get charge people subscriptions for your media that you know, freely uploaded onto my network, and then I locked you out of it.
Same thing happened to Jordan Maxwell as well. Oh, to a degree, they just locked him out of his website and kept all the money from all his royalties and everything for themselves. And like 76-year-old man, and take his entire career work from him. And just thinking, you know what?
The same thing happened to me.
Stupidity.
I had three websites.
Stupidity is like scumbaggery. Both are without limit. All right, there is no limit to how dumb somebody can be until somebody just breaches that threshold. Okay, it'll always surprise you. The same with evil, the same with scumbaggery. It frickin' surprises you how bad people are.
And we're really at a disadvantage in this situation because a lot of us are idealists. I'm an idealist, man. I want to believe. If you come to me with an impassioned argument and you really have a good, you know, you're convincing and you're arguing.
No, you got to quit that, Freddie. You got to get some balance in your life, okay? You got to become a jaded, cynical idealist.
It's true. A non-idealist. Well, no, I have. Unfortunately, I have over time become cynical and jaded. But my point is that I'm still susceptible as an idealist because I am not a materialist. I'm an idealist. But the problem is that materialism will win out on idealism every single time. Because we live in a world where everyone's ignoring the idealistic or the metaphysical or the spiritual aspects because they're not provable by scientific qualification. And that was a deliberate bait and switch that began a long time ago. Because if you ignore an aspect of reality, that's already setting you up to be in a disadvantage. And deep down, you will know, you intuit that you're at a disadvantage. You know what that does? That creates anxiety and it creates fear in you, and you are manipulable. We can manipulate you if you're afraid and insecure. Mm-hmm. And now, what we'll do is, you know how we're going to do it? Because you're only going to cleave to the physical. We've taught you to only believe in the material things. We got some great dogma for you. Here it is. It's called religion, or it's called nationalism, or it's called NASCAR. You know what I mean? It doesn't matter.
It's called capitalism.
NFL. Yeah, and it's called capitalism. Exactly.
It's called socialism.
All these isms are dogma. And what do? They allow people, they give them this warm, cozy feeling like I'm laying on a bed of pillows and somebody's got Q-tips in my ears. You know what I mean? And it's like, you know, that's just fake, man. It's just a way to make you, it's like Jordan Maxwell said the other night, walking, you know, you're whistling past the graveyard, trying not to be scared. But deep down, you are scared because you know you don't know. You know it doesn't feel right. It really doesn't feel right deep down, but you don't want to look at it. Because if you look at it, guess what? Now the responsibility is going to be on you to do something about it. And that's why we're in the position we're in today. It's not just because people are dumb or ignorant. It's because they're scared. They're cowardly. Don't want to stand up.
That's what I really dislike about these born-again truthers, these people who've only just woken up to, like, 9/11 being an inside job or the vaccine's bad or whatever, but they go
chemtrails
off with...
Yeah, right.
It doesn't matter what it is, and I'm not saying any of these things aren't real. They absolutely are real, but it's like anybody who converts instantaneously from one religion to another and devotes themselves fully to it, they don't know what they've gotten themselves into, and they're unfamiliar with where their belief structure actually came from and what it actually is. So they come off like hypocritical zealots who don't know anything but more than a couple phrases or a couple of factoids more than the average person. And they use that as a justification to abuse people, right? And just say that you're dumb because I know a little bit of something that you don't. You're stupid. You're a sheeple or something. As if saying that, oh, nobody else is ever going to wake up is a reasonable thing to do. No, it's an emotional reaction. Of course other people are waking up. People are waking up all the time. What do you think? You were the last one, you know? The last truth. You know, what is this, the Book of Eli? All right, right. Look, you're not special.
And you're going to presume that you're in charge of somebody else's awakening, that you're responsible for, you know, like them awakening in the fashion that you think they should. I'm talking about for dogma, you know, for religion, for example.
I love the perception is reality dogma. It's like, really, really, your perception is reality, just yours, right? Okay, so what about the other 7 billion consciousnesses that are around here that are human with their own individual perceptions? Are you saying that you're one just annexes everybody else's views, actions, and existence just because you don't think so, right?
Totally. I spoke in front of a, I was in Austin, Texas, and I got up in front of it was a couple hundred Christians, and I'm telling them about my article about the ghosts of the Nephilim, and I happened to throw out the caveat that, you know, there's thousands, maybe even millions of paths up the mountaintop. There's not one way, not one path. I throw this out to a room full of Christians, and these are like Bible-thumping fundamentalist Christians.
You fucking idiot, man.
right. I didn't even think about it, Vinny. I've been
you know, this is the problem. You're just pathologically honest, and you get yourself into deep shit with people who lie to themselves constantly. That's it.
Totally, right. You're shooting yourself in front of people who are constantly lying to themselves. But, you know, I'm thinking, I've been spoiled because I've been in rooms full of truthers that are like, you can tell them just about anything, you know what I mean? And they're like, if you've got some, you know, what I'm saying is that they're open to just about any suggestion if you've got an impassioned argument or whatever. But I just was spoiled thinking I could speak my mind freely. Like you said, I could be honest. So the first woman in the crowd raises her hand, is right in the front row. She's probably, you know, 50, 60 years old. She raises her hand up and she goes, so let me get this straight. You say there's more than one path to salvation? And I'm like, well, yeah, right? I mean, we live in a world with 10 billion people in it. I mean, it can't be just one truth, right? Here I am thinking still I'm talking to rational people here, you know? And she's like, so let me get this straight. I have another follow-up question. Let me get this straight. So you don't believe in God? And I'm like, what do you mean I don't believe in God? I didn't say anything. Well, do you believe in the Bible? And I'm like, what, that it exists? Yes.
Yeah, I mean, I've held one of them. I mean, somebody planted one of them in my hotel room once.
Yeah, the Gideons are real people, I think, because they're always putting Bibles everywhere, you know? And so freaking next thing you know, she's like, no. You don't believe that Jesus came to save you from your sins? And I said, no, I don't. And that was it, man. I lost the room, right? I mean, it was over. And that was the first talk on the first day, Vinny. I had 3 talks and 3 days to go and a table full of merchandise.
Now,
you know, I was just...
Ladies and gentlemen, what happened to Frater is exactly the reason why an honest politician can't win an election race. because you've got to appeal to the masses of unthinking, ignorant people who all disagree with each other simultaneously in order to get their vote. You know how you can accomplish that? By saying one thing to one crowd and one thing to another, and somewhere in between, you become a liar, and then there is no going back from it. That's what it takes to be successful. I think that's why they've structured the system this way and made people think in this way.
And now they use special interests. They use focus groups where they poll people and they get specific little minute issues that they get enough of a percentage of the polled people to reinforce that this is an issue people want to hear about. Yeah. And they focus only on that.
See, these people are so stupid. These people are so stupid that they need a room full of people in order to focus.
Yeah, right. Exactly. So here's the best part of the story, Vinny. The next 2 days were just as much of a nightmare as you'd expect. And luckily, though, there was like a dozen truthers, quote unquote, people who listen to our shows, who know us. And you know, even our good friend Danny Romero stopped by that conference. But the fact of the matter is that there was enough people who were at the conference to not make me feel completely demoralized. But on the last day, the last event of the whole conference, that woman and another woman who was very well dressed, they very wealthy people, they were from South Africa, and they had a house in Texas too, San Antonio, a big house. I mean, they made a point of telling me how big and beautiful their house was, and they wanted me and Mater X, my wife, they came up to us and they said, you know, we have to speak to you. We were praying last night and the Holy Spirit spoke to us and said, we have to save you. Me and my wife, right? And that this is the whole point.
I've got my mic muted, folks, so you can't hear the, oh, my God. Oh.
So I'm sitting, this is horrifying to me. You know, this woman, she's wearing like pearls. She's got like an evening gown on. She's obviously super wealthy. They got a giant like, you know, SUV out in the parking lot. It's like, it's pearl colored, you know, that rich pearl color. And here they are saying, hey, why don't you guys come back to our mansion with us this weekend and we'll witness to you and we can save you. You know, what do you say? And I'm like, yeah, no, we got to get back.
I would have said, well, I think Jesus will spare me from that. So
and she's like, are you saved? And I'm like, saved from what?
Yeah, I am saved. I've got a life jacket, you know. I've got a couple of sticks of gum in my pocket. You know, I feel saved.
But here's the audacity. This is the one of the women was the same woman who heard me say that I obviously didn't believe this dogma, but because, like you were talking about earlier, they took it upon themselves to think that my salvation was their responsibility. Like I had to, and we had to go. We were like time pressed, and they're like, you know, holding us hostage kind of till I finally just extricated us. I'm like, we got to get out of here. I'm sorry.
You freighter extradited yourself.
I freighter extricated myself out of there, man. I was like, freighter
extraction.
Going. Freighter extraction. Yeah, send in the red team. Blue team scramble.
Orange team poached.
It's crazy, man. And so, you know, it all goes back to that point, though, is that the reason why religion gets over so well, especially in America, is because everybody's so friggin' duped. It's all a big fraud and a scam. It's like when we were in school, right? I mean, I know you know what I'm talking about. I knew that teacher didn't know what the hell they were talking about. They were reading it out of the book. If you took that book away from them and made them try to do it without the book, they were lost. So my job, my mission, was to divert their attention from that lesson plan and watch their entire house of cards collapse and have them fall on their face in front of the whole room. That was my mission, which is why I got kicked out of so many schools and classrooms.
I got suspended 17 times from high school.
I went through 4 different high schools.
I went through 4 different primary schools.
I got banned for life from the biology lab.
Oh, I never got banned
for life from biology.
Man, I got banned from life from the computer class. I think because I went in there to do some computer work when I wasn't allowed to, and then they banned me for life from it.
I'll tell you a funny one. One time at lunchtime in my school, there's just literally like dozens of kids walking up and down the hallways, and they had the doors open because it was warm. It was springtime. And back then, we could still smoke cigarettes in school. This is how I'm dating myself here, right? But here I am, 16 years old, smoking cigarettes in the high school because we're allowed to outside the door. And these kids that were right there had a broken bottle rocket, like a big one, not a small bottle rocket, but a nice, bigger than the M80 size bottle rocket. And they had a broken stick and they were handing it back and forth. You do it. No, you do it. They wanted to light it outside the door. I grabbed it like Mr. Big Shot from them, lit the thing, and it did a 180 and shot right into the school, down the hallway, doing loop-de-loops over everybody's heads. And right when the principal turned the corner to come towards us, it blew up right in his face. Oh man, the entire hallway's like, he did it. They all ratted me out.
Oh, come on, man, you sealed me out like this.
It was unbelievable. That's the history of my upbringing in schooling in America. You know what I mean?
It's a microcosm that forthwith represents in a small way every other encounter and experience you had on a daily basis. You know, it's just kind of like some days of you have good days and some days you have bad days, and other days bad people just make your day crappy because they're just scum, right?
Well, yeah, and also because I was like that little kid in the Hans Christian Andersen, you know, fairy tale, The Emperor Wears No Clothes. So everybody else got mad at that little kid in the story. You know why? Because they knew he didn't have no clothes either, but they were too scared to say anything. And the little kid had more courage than everybody else because he didn't realize, he couldn't get it. He didn't understand why everybody's ignoring the truth here. And so he spoke the obvious truth. And he was a threat to the establishment. It was the same with me. When I was in school, I knew that it was a sham, and I tried to prove it to my classmates. You know what I did? I said, I'm not going to do anything. Watch. I won't do any work. And they passed me with straight Fs. And so every time a report card came out, we got them at our desks. We're all sitting in our little desk, and everybody's showing each other their cards. And, ooh, look, he got 3 A's, and he got 2 A's and a B, and da-da-da. And I pull out my report card, straight Fs, red, across the board. And at the end of it, it says, pass to the next grade. And I said, I'm looking at everybody going, look, man, I didn't have to do anything, and they're passing me. And that made the kids mad around me. You know, because they were like, why are we trying so hard?
There's two ways to make great achievements. One is to have a lot of hard work and discipline, and the other is to just be talented.
Yeah, it's true. And that's why, you know, people who want the progressive liberals in America, they want, you know, equality for everyone. And you mentioned earlier about some in the truth movements that they talk about, like, some people aren't worthy, or, you know, some people are better than other people or whatever. And there's somewhere in between those extremes, there is the reality of the fact. And the fact of the matter is that some people are more talented than others. It doesn't mean they're better than them. It just means they may have better talents in some ways. And other people are just not, like, you know, some people don't care about anything we're talking about, Vinny, because they just are fine and dandy with working for whatever system is ruling over their lives. And it doesn't really matter to them whether it's a just system or not. It doesn't matter as long as the wheels keep turning and things that they want keep coming down the
chute.
Here's
the question.
That's all that matters.
We have factual proof that, let's say we'll make up a fictional carry here. Jerry, he works at an insurance company, and we know that insurance company is owned by criminal cartel, mafia, bankster, scumbaggery. And we know that Jerry is also a very talented musician, and he could be spending his time full-time on a musician's supplement called The Doll and make music instead of being a slave for a scumbag corporation and actually get some fulfillment out of his life and change the consciousness of other people who hear his incredibly awesome music. But Jerry doesn't believe that what he's doing is of no consequence. Jerry doesn't believe that he has the talent to play guitar and improve people's lives and be able to support himself while he's doing it. And Jerry won't look at the evidence that we have to show that his entire life has been leading up to this moment where he has to make a choice about whether or not he's living his life for somebody else's lies or his own truth.
Totally. I mean, my name's not Jerry, I swear. Yeah, You're right, man. What are you talking? You're telling the story of probably 50 to 100 million Americans out there, maybe. People that sounds like the system worked right there. What you described, the system worked, didn't it, for that situation? Because Jerry is staying a slave, right, and not doing the thing that might be of more service to the humanity around him, right?
Yep.
He's gonna believe in the non-potential instead of the potential.
All right. It's about in the body, the thing that actually corrodes cells and destroys them and that kind of thing and actually thieves electrons, energy from the cells, are called free radicals. All right. Imagine the New World Order as the body, and we are the free radicals trying to eat it up and destroy it and corrode it and wear it away. It doesn't like that.
That's it. It doesn't like it. And we are the free radicals. That's a great analogy. And the problem is that most free radicals get wiped out by the body's defenses. That's what happens. Unless the free radicals overtake the system and make great changes to it, right?
Well, I found it's actually the free radicals are like water on rock. It doesn't matter how solid the rock the waves are crashing upon. Eventually, it will be worn away, regardless of how many waves had to be smashed upon it in order to do so. All right. And I like the Greek idea that the way to sort of live your life or really to plan for the future is in a simple act like planting a tree whose shade you know you will never be able to sit under.
That's cool. I like that. Yep. And that's a kind of an idealistic action that it seems so scarce in our world today. So few. Well, and I don't want to say it doesn't exist because I do have optimism, and I know that people do. There's people that heard what you just said and can say to themselves, "I'm like that." You know what I mean? I'd do that, and they're out there. That's the only hope we have. It's also the only hope. What you just said about the water aspect, that's what gives me hope, Vinny. Is that no matter what, the more control we exert, the more chaos will come out. Because you can try, you know, think about any situation in your life where you tried to over-control it.
Yeah.
How did it turn out? You know what I mean? How did it turn out?
Let's say you had a water balloon in your hand and you wanted to make sure that it didn't drip any. The harder you squeeze, the more likely that water balloon is to pop or squeeze and slip through your fingers.
There it is.
That's like tyranny, man. Sooner or later, they squeeze too hard and I love the term they, you know, the ubiquitous they. Because this is multi-generational, multi-organizational, multifaceted, and multi-industrial and military and medical. It's a very huge, complex system. But like everything that's large and complex, its effects are usually quite simple. And that is, it maintains control and dominance and only improves its methodology to contain its strength, all right, and power. So let's say, for example, you've got a few thousand years to whittle away the human race down to the point where you know so much about what makes us tick that keeping us in control is a piece of piss.
Yeah. The only hope we have, ladies and gentlemen, is to be those free radicals. I mean, that's it. You know, every one of us, the non-compliance through whatever means you feel necessary. Seriously, it's up to you. It's just like religion. We keep talking about all these religions. The whole point of the reason why religions are all compromised is because we're not supposed to join religions. We're supposed to start our own. That's what the whole point is. That's why there's such variety. We're supposed to do like a la carte and pick and start our own. It's the same thing with politics. It's the same thing with society. That's why truly empowered societies would be quote unquote anarchistic. And that's not chaos, ladies and gentlemen. Contrary to your dictionaries, anarchy does not mean chaos. It means no masters. It means no leaders. It means self-rule, which means believing in the goodness of the human spirit and believing that people are inherently good. And I know they are, and so does Vinny, and so do the people listening to the show, because we live with people all around us, and most of the people out there are not here to hurt you. They're here to work and, you know, take care of their family and do whatever they can to get what they want out of life, which doesn't mean hurting you. But they would have us believe otherwise, just like gun violence in America. I was talking to somebody just today or yesterday about it. And I'm like, what do you think? Is gun violence up in America or not? Oh, it's an epidemic. Well, why do you think that? Well, look at all the shootings in school. I said, how come all our schools are like prisons? Well, look at all the shootings. I said, when was there ever a shooting around here in school? There never has been, but the schools locally here are like prisons. You got to get buzzed in, you know? And I said, have you ever looked on the statistics? If anybody listening to this show right now, go on your computer, if you're in America or not, type in U.S. Registry of Statistics, and then type in gun violence in America. It'll show you the statistics in a graph. And guess what, everybody? It's been going down since 1992. It's 40% less than it was in 1992, with the exception of one spike in 2003, where there was a spike up. And there was something about the reason why there was a spike up right then, there was some kind of regulation or something that happened that contributed to that spike in gun violence and going up. But the fact of the matter is that gun violence across the board in America has gone down, and it is down 40%. They don't want you to know that, though. They want you to think it's an epidemic. Why? Because there's 100 million gun owners right there out there in America that are the only defense against total and utter tyranny.
Have a look just have a look on Wikipedia and have a look at I did this one time. I was like, you know what? I'm going to figure this out once and for all. You just go to Wikipedia and it has the lists of all the measures of the gun crime statistics listed by country. Is America the number one for gun violence? No. Is it number two? No. Is it number 10? No. 50? No. 100? No. 111th. All right. The top 50 gun crime countries in the world are in Africa. All right. Not including socialist countries in South America that have banned guns. All right. See, that's the thing. You're living in the 111th most dangerous country in the world. Ooh, that's freaking scary. Better ban everybody's freaking guns, eh? You know?
That's huge, man. That is huge, everybody. 111th. But yet, guess what? America is number one in people in prison. We're the number one country.
And executing felons.
People in prison.
And obesity.
And executing felons.
And debt per person.
And babies that are born, infant mortality is like really high in America, which seems crazy because we're supposed to be a developed nation. But infant mortality is super high here. You know what I mean?
Okay. So
it's crazy.
It's only crazy because scumbaggery is involved. This is the thing. When something doesn't make sense, it's usually because there's some kind of conspiracy going on. That's what I've learned over time. You know, it's just like the facts don't seem to make up. And
yeah, but let's focus on that for a second, Vinny. You're absolutely right. You know, this whole entire show, we've sat here and we've unpacked and we've pointed at things and been like, isn't it crazy how we think this about this, but in reality, it's this way? Isn't it crazy how everybody says this, but in reality, it's this way? Everybody says that, but it's in reality this way. This is not just a coincidence, ladies and gentlemen. This is the dark occulted mysticism we speak of. Because the world, our awareness of the world, has a veil over it. It's like a global enchantment, and everyone is under the influence. You cannot see through the veil unless, right, you need some sort of counteragent, an inoculation. You know, people like Vinny and I, we were lucky enough to somehow be either abused by our peers or felt socially awkward enough, or something happened in which we started thinking outside the box. We didn't drink the Kool-Aid anymore. Everybody else kept drinking the Kool-Aid. We stopped. That's what happens. People listening to this show, you're listening to this show because something happened in your life which interrupted the dogma and the brainwashing that was going on, and you raised your head from the trough for a second and were like, wait a second. Hey, whoa, this is weird. This doesn't seem right. And then you're like looking around for explanations. So you listen to guys like Vinny or guys like me or anybody else who point out and say, yeah, it wasn't just a coincidence that you thought that way. You're not a crazy. There is something totally amiss. But at the core of it, we could sit here for hours and hours and hours and identify all these problems. But we have to see that this is a whole system. It's because we're all enchanted. We're all under this enchantment. And how is it fueled? Through money, through power, through blood. This is real magic, ladies and gentlemen. Money, blood, power. This is how it's manipulated. They use. Why do you think there's war everywhere? Why do you think we have boots, weapons, you know, military personnel on the ground in almost 200 countries around the world. In America, we do.
Why do you think the five permanent members of the UN Security Council, incidentally, are also the five biggest weapons manufacturers?
For the same reason that all the major generals of the South Vietnamese country during the Vietnam War were also opium warlords.
You see?
Just like the generals in Afghanistan are all warlords as well, you know?
Okay, so what if we told you, ladies and gentlemen, that the reason why all these things are happening is because the world is in fact run by crazy people? Does it suddenly make a hell of a lot more sense? You know? Listening to this radio show is like wearing an intellectual prophylactic, all right? You're not going to catch a disease off this. We're not trying to transmit something that's harmful and infectious, something that's good and infectious, you know? I consider myself, you know how they call yourselves a talk show host, you know? And I like the play of the words of the host and the parasite, because I do consider myself a talk show parasite, because I parasite off my guests, who are often a lot smarter and possess talents that I don't. That's why I like to speak with them, and that's why all my friends have talents that I don't have. But when it comes down to it, if you're not...
It's good of you to acknowledge that out loud, Vinny, I think.
Yeah. Well, you
know? Others don't.
Look, if you don't have an... If you say that you don't have an ego, you're lying to yourself. If you don't give compliments to others who you will admit are actually better at something than you, then you're also lying to yourself. And not only that, are you denying yourself the benefit of their talents.
Right. And what you might learn from what they have to say.
Exactly.
Because Aristotle said the mark of an educated mind is one that can entertain ideas even if you don't agree with them. That's the mark of an educated mind.
Unlike certain people who live in mansions and thump Bibles. There's the... Well, I've been getting into a lot of this debate with people, all right? And I know that people hold their beliefs very, very rigidly. And it frustrates me because I don't hold my beliefs that rigidly, all right? I hold facts and logic very solidly. For example, I don't believe that working for the system and making money is a bad thing for me. I know that it's a bad thing for me. Okay? I've got facts. I've got evidence. I came to these conclusions because of these things that I've seen and have measured and have been able to prove. Beliefs, on the other hand, they're in the possibility box. And unless you know the difference between a belief and knowledge, you're going to get manipulated with that possibility box for the rest of your days. You'll never know the difference between real and unreal. That's how they get you. That's how they implant things into your mind, because you can't work out the truth for yourself. You can't ask who told you that, what did they say, why did they say it, how did they say it, you know, that kind of thing. The ways that you deduce things is something I learned in sixth form journalism. All right, that's when you're 16 years old in New Zealand high school, okay? And it just first day, and this is the only thing I've ever learned about journalism, and it's the only thing I've actually needed to know in order to be a journalist, better journalist than all of the mainstream journalists that live today, is you got to be honest, all right? You got to ask those very simple questions: who, what, when, where, why, and how, all right? Once you've got the answer to all that questions, boom, then you write your article and you phrase exactly what happened in a factual manner so that you're not manipulating, lying, or being dishonest. Okay? I knew that by instinct. Other people who do this for a job know that and choose to deliberately ignore their responsibility to give credible information in an honest way to people. And I'm glad that, Freda, you mentioned about the audience here and how we can actually speak to them on this kind of, in a real level, in a real way, because I have spoken with so many of my audience. Like the people who don't listen to my show, who just leave the comments and stuff like that, Freda, they're just idiots, right? they see the title of one show or something and they make an assumption and a deduction. They never actually listen to it. But the people who stay and actually listen find that there's a hell of a lot to learn, a lot of fun to be had, and that there is still some wonder in the world. Those are the only people that are worth my time talking to. Everybody else, block, and the scum is gone. So thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for listening to this wonderful broadcast with a wonderful guest. And for some of you who have been listening for years and donating. And by the way, American Freedom Radio has been hosting my show for like 5 years now. Okay? 5 years. Send them some money.
It's been almost 5 months for me, too.
Mm-hmm.
Over 4 years, yep.
Okay. This isn't a weekend retreat for us. I heard this... Have you seen the director's cut of Watchmen, the movie, or did you like the Watchmen film?
Oh, yeah. I haven't seen the director's cut, but I read the comics and I've seen the film, yes.
Dude, I will totally send you the link so you can illegally download it. But the
excellent.
There's this part where Rorschach talks to the, what's it called? Spoiler alert, by the way, the psychiatrist, right? He's in prison. And he says that once you see society's dark underbelly, you can't turn your back on it and you can't ignore it and pretend that it doesn't exist like you do. We don't do this thing because we want to. We do it because we're compelled.
That's it, man. Absolutely. Because we're certainly not getting rich off it.
Somebody accused me of doing it for the money, and I was like, do you reckon I'm that stupid? Like, telling the truth for the money.
You're operating with a different definition of money, I guess.
I'm like, what are you talking about? People don't get paid money to tell the truth. That's why all the people that lie to you on a constant basis are rich as shit.
Yeah, I was accused the other day on the internet by another podcaster who we know that I have an agenda. I have an agenda with my book, The Secret War Inside Freemasonry, because I wrote a book, so I have an agenda. And you know what? I do have an agenda. You know what the agenda was? To
expose
story.
The secret war on Freemasonry?
Yeah.
You know, I thought it would be obvious.
Hello? It is an agenda to bring, like, you know, a voice to a silent majority within the lodge system to, like, point out a big cover-up that I thought was spilling over into our whole culture, you know, our whole society. Yeah, that's my agenda. You got me. My agenda is to bring light to darkness. You know what I mean? And this is, but I'm flabbergasted that they were trying to disqualify me in the rhetoric because they claimed I had an agenda, as if they didn't have an agenda too, by the way.
As if they actually read your book or listened to a couple of your broadcasts. Or see, this is the thing. People judge without knowing. And that really frustrates me as a narcissist because I don't take criticism well.
I don't take criticism well either. I've still hung up on the whole thing about being said I had an agenda.
Although, have you noticed that if somebody actually says something valid and then your brain suddenly clicks on, you go, wow, that's actually really valid criticism. Thank you for that, Ryan. It's when people don't actually criticize, when they just insult you, that's what hurts.
Yeah, and that's the thing is that when they said that to me, I responded and I was like, so I take it you've read my book? Because you have an opinion, right? But they didn't respond when I said that. You know, it's like, so you probably didn't even read my book. That's why you're not responding now. And like you said before, there's no greater ignorance, ladies and gentlemen, than contempt prior to investigation. How can you say a thing, anything about a thing, if you know nothing about it? You can't. You're ignorant if you're going to say anything about it. We have to, you know, suspend judgment and comment. But we see, we live in a world where it's like 3 second sound bites and the clever quips and clever retorts, and everybody thinks there's a laugh track behind their comment. You know what I mean? I mean, I know in your circumstance that is the case. You should have a laugh track, actually. But the fact of the matter is that most people are too busy thinking about the next one liner to realize the substance of what they're saying. And you cannot dismiss a thing if you know nothing about it. That's why, let me just, you know, shameless promotion. Anybody wants to check out my book, The Secret War Inside Freemasonry, it is for sale on Amazon and also at the website, the site where you can get it is middlechamberlettersfx.wordpress.com.
And there's also a link to that on thevinnyeastwoodshow.com.
Excellent. And there's a link to that on thevinnyeastwoodshow.com. And this is a book that this that one person that I mentioned is the only person to offer any negative criticism about my book, and I'm not even sure they read it. Everybody else who's read my book has nothing but positive things to say about it. And the biggest thing I hear is that there's so much packed into such a small volume. It's literally only like 150 pages. And there's so much in there. And that's part of the what's so special about this is because I was able to really distill it down to the core issues. And one of the main issues is a very similar issue that we're talking about here tonight. And that one of the chapters in my book is called The Secret War on Human Consciousness. And this is the sonic revolution that the free radical Vinnie Eastwood and the free radical Freighter X are engaged in warfare against, is the secret war on human consciousness, which is being conducted in your mind, ladies and gentlemen, right now as we speak. That's the battleground. And it's happening through television, through media. That's why my show says, listen to the paradigm shift. And I say we are in a psychoacoustic insurrection going on here, everybody. We are involved in a literal insurrection of ideas, a revolution of ideas, ideology. And we're competing against the most powerful evil empire. It makes the dark empire of Star Wars look like, you know, a little gang on the corner.
Fredo, because that passionate right? speech just gave me an insurrection. I just thought I'd slip that in there just quietly.
Whoa! Where'd you slip that? Well, wouldn't it be the Vinnie Eastwood show without some reference to your genitals?
I mean, who would be interested in the truth if not for dick jokes? And this is a lesson that I actually learned from George Carlin, because he actually survived the longest out of all the very, very anti-establishment comedians and had a very successful career, because he realized one very important fact. If you're going to tell people really, really harsh and uncomfortable truths, you're going to want a few dick jokes.
It's so true. Yep. He is one of my favorites. I had vinyl records of Class Clown and other albums of his when I was a kid. It's showing my age again, but I saw George Carlin twice live. Yeah, great guy. I mean, just, you're right. And he's one of the few that lasted the longest, but it's absolutely right because he was so funny on top of it. And, you know, I don't think people realize until the last couple of years of life when he came up with so many really hardcore stand-ups that were like, almost not even really funny because they were so powerful, you know what I mean? But that was the real Carlin. And now I knew why people who were very conservative in my upbringing didn't like him, you know? But I couldn't understand it. They always like, oh, yeah, Carlin, he's a liberal or whatever. And I was like, I never really got what they meant until I started listening to the last couple of years of his life. And it was just amazing how right on he was. And, you know, again, I remain optimistic. So some people would say he seemed very pessimistic at the end there. And you know, right.
What I really dislike is those people going, oh, but what are you going to do about it? You know, it's all fine talking about it. You do realize that talking about it when other people don't have the courage to say it is doing something?
That's it. And it's just like we've been talking about all along in the show. It's that wave against the rock, the wave against the rock, the wave. How did they get to where they got today? If not, and I say they, meaning the powers that shouldn't be controlling our lives. How did the powers that shouldn't be controlling our lives get to where they got today? If not through repetitive, rote reinforcement over and over again, like training a puppy not to poop on the floor. You know what I mean? It's just a reinforcement, behavioral conditioning over and over again.
You need to, like, suffer. Basically, and it's the best way to program somebody to believe something is if they get pain induced in their life to believe otherwise.
Well, that's the tragic reality is that change only seems to happen with a tremendous upheaval and catastrophe and That's the only reason why people will ever be motivated or inspired, it seems, on a mass level to make tremendous changes and with some sort of catastrophe or, you know, like a depression or a revolution or, you know, a natural disaster, which or a threat from without.
Well, you know how the elite pull false flags in order to convince the quote unquote sheeple. And I don't like that term. I prefer slave scum. But in order to convince them to give up their liberties or something like that. But what if a whole bunch of conspiracy theorists actually found some bootleg, I don't know, cop uniforms or something like that, and they went to a protest disguised as police officers and ruthlessly beat the hell out of everybody they could see at the protest, people on the sides of the road, and just be absolutely vicious and just basically point the finger at the police and the establishment and saying they're all fascists and you need to stand up for your rights and your liberties, etc. or like, would that work? It'd be quite interesting to see if you could do such a thing and invoke a lot of real positive changes in people by beating the living shit out of them for no reason.
Well, the funny thing is, the most remarkable thing is, Vinny, that already happened in 1968 at the Chicago National Democratic Convention when the police rioted on the TV and attacked everyone. Bystanders, women, children, anyone in the streets got attacked by the police, and they rioted. The police, and that is why everyone, when I was growing up, used to call the police pigs. That was it. When we were growing up, cops were called pigs. That was common across the board, all walks of life. It was a standing joke in the 70s and 80s. Oh, here come the pigs, or oh, I smell bacon, or oh, suey, oink, oink, whatever. It was always a reference to pork and pigs.
It's because they
left over.
No, it's because they stick their big snout in your business.
Well, that too, but it's also because they were like, you know, inhuman. What they had done, they were considered pigs to the culture. What they, you know, a pig is a dangerous thing, by the way. You know, have you ever been on a pig farm, man? I mean, those male pigs, those boars are scary as hell, man. They sound like monsters. If you get in that thing, they'll gore you and devour you. I mean, they are a real monster. And that is,
yeah, the it's like Congress.
Exactly. Or, you know,
except
like Congress or,
except there's less filth.
Or like the police forces, like the, you know, these cops out there. And then, you know, what happened? Hill Street Blues, NYPD Blue, you know, Law and Order, NCIS, all these shows, CSI, they brainwashed the entire population along with the, you know, propaganda about first responders and everything. And just like now they're worshipped in our culture. And in my town, we have road work going on, Vinny. There's people living in this town who could use work, man. I mean, there's lots of people who could use work around here. And they got cops, three or four of them, standing at one work site with yellow coats on, getting paid, no lie, man, $75 an hour to stand there and flag people through. These are cops. Why? Because they're unionized and they have unions set up to give them overtime duty. Instead of paying, like, you know, people like a flagger in other places, they'll pay unemployed people to do that, you know, give them work. No, we'll give the fat cops that already get a paycheck, already get a pension, already get everything, you know, taken care of, health care and all that. Let's give them overtime and give them $75 an hour to sit there on their phones. Three or four of them, two on one site, not just one, three or four, right? This is the state of affairs. The cops in America now are like the new aristocracy. And I say we bring back that nomenclature, the grouping of the term pigs around cops, because all you got to do is, you know, take a look at all the friggin' media out there about what they're doing in the world today to know that they still are. Like you said, you know, that would be great.
I dislike it whenever you say or put up police brutality. There's new social media police PR now where police are rolling around and just giving people pulling them over for actually following the road rules and just giving them $100 and going, thank you very much for going online. Okay, well, that's great. You gave out $1,500 to 1,500 people, and that somehow makes up for the millions of dollars in tickets that you've given out to people who couldn't afford to pay it, who were struggling on welfare with kids they couldn't feed because of your ticket gun.
And those same people were taxed to pay your salary so you could turn around and prey upon them again.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No. Where did you get that $1,500 that you just gave back? By chance, did you steal it off other people?
Right. Oh, no. Hey, hey, you just brought up a good point. They just put out the statistics for 2015 in America. The public forfeiture of property to the police was exceeded by $5 billion worth of property was taken by the police in forfeiture in the commission of a crime. Guess what? Only $4 billion worth of property was stolen by thieves. The cops have taken more than the thieves in America.
And now we have a statistical evidence that confirms our beliefs. You've been listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, and good night.
You know, I just, yeah, hey, and we're at the end of it now, but anybody wants to check out my show on Saturday nights on American Freedom Radio, and then it's always posted afterwards, and my blog, frederix.blogspot, friend me on Facebook. Please review everything. Rate and review all of our media, Vinny's media too. If you rate and review it, it gets more attention. It gets more circulation because it means it's being looked at, and they make it more available. So everybody, rate and review everything. And thanks for letting me rant and rave tonight, Vinny. I appreciate it.
Well, thank you for letting me interrupt you. And the music just interrupted me. How awesome. We'll see you again sometime, folks. Thanks very much for listening.